Welcome back to Talking Asset Management with KPMG and our private credit focused podcast. I'm Brett Fieldston, and I'm joined today by my good friend and colleague, Philip Murphy from KPMG Ireland.
Hey, Brett.
This is our series on private credit in our foreign jurisdictions. So, Philip, thought we'd have a conversation today about what's going on in Ireland, which, as we all know, is one of the preeminent jurisdictions for private credit and investment funds more generally in Europe. So can you give us a sense of the overview of the latest developments in Ireland? What's going on?
Yeah, sure, Brett. Happy to chat to us. I suppose probably two key things if I was going to talk to kind of latest developments, right? It's one that's recently fresh off the press, and we're kind of recording this in December time, is our government has just gone through a full consultation process about our funds regime generally, right? So not just tax, it looks at education, it looks at structures, it looks at every aspect of the ecosystem. And it was a pretty involved process. It's kind of taken about a year. And one of the helpful things to come out of it, we have a big arsenal of tools available in Ireland, different types of vehicles, partnerships, corporates, regulated funds, and so on that we can use for different strategies, including credit. I'd say one of the overall aspects to come out of that consultation process was kind of recommendations to make small little tweaks just to make the different regimes more operable and more user-friendly, right? One example of that, we have an unregulated partnership model that I think we've probably used on a particular structure that, Brett, I know certainly you've set one up before with them. And managing the VAT, right, where the manager provides services to it, was always a little bit clunky. You kind of had to do a bit of an approach around it. That's now been, there's just a blanket exemption for VAT for management for an unregulated partnership, which is really helpful. And it's one of the things that's come out of that consultation. So I found it quite positive in a sense that some of those things when you're having conversations with clients where you say, this vehicle is great, but you have to do a little bit extra. Hopefully that's going to start to be eradicated and remove those little barriers and little obstacles over the next short while based on the recommendations in the report.
Well, I think that's very helpful because I know as a US advisor, we always sort of stumble over VAT, forget about it because it's just a foreign concept to us. And then I feel like it always comes up the last minute on transactions and clients, especially in the US market, are sort of surprised sometimes that it could be a lot of VAT or complicated around VAT, how to get those exemptions.
Absolutely. It's one of the more esoteric taxes, I would say, when we're doing structuring for US clients, and it's never nice to get a surprise at the end. So it's quite helpful. The other thing that we've seen come in recently, and again, it's part of the consultation process and the law's just been passed, is our participation exemption. Before, that could only really apply to gains. So where an Irish company sells a company in another jurisdiction, you can get tax-free once you meet conditions. Dividends used to be a bit clunkier. It used to be you'd have to claim credits, and it was pretty complex actually to do it. Our participation exemption has now been extended to foreign source dividends, right? So Ireland is a holding company jurisdiction, maybe a bit less relevant for credit unless you're equitizing a lot of positions. But Ireland as a holding company has become a lot more attractive based on that change that's come through. So I'd say pretty positive spin on some of the things that we've seen coming through of late. And it's just more tools that we have in our arsenal when we're out kind of selling Ireland as a jurisdiction to clients to set up funds.
Right. And maybe just for the sake of our audience, a little help, so it sounds like it's easier to get money into Ireland now, but what about getting money out? I don't think you're quite as good as the UK, but maybe kind of there. So maybe you could just elaborate on that so people get both ends of the spectrum.
Yeah, sure. I'd say we've pretty generous domestic exemptions, right? One of the questions I often get asked is, what's the Irish treaty rate if you pay out from Ireland to X country or Y country? And I always wind that back and say, well, actually, we never generally need treaty for making payments out. We have pretty generous domestic exemptions. So if you're paying interest or dividends to a corporate that's EU or treaty, and we've got 75 treaties thereabouts, there's a domestic exemption that applies. There might be a little bit of admin, we're putting declarations in place, but that's pretty favorable. One aspect that could be better, and there's lots of bit work being done in the background around this, is it can be a little bit cumbersome if you're paying through partnerships, right? So you might have to list your debt and have it quoted on an exchange if you're paying through a partnership. But again, there's lots of broader discussions to say, well, actually, there should be an easier way of doing that, because if you know that there's a good partner who's entitled to a domestic exemption behind the partnership, it should be possible to pay gross. So I'd say it's relatively simple to get money out. If there's a partnership, it's a little bit more complex, but that might change in the future.
That all sounds great, because a lot of deals that we've worked on, from traditional credit to esoteric credit, royalties, whiskey sales, everything else like that, there's always been questions around domestic equity exemptions, domestic interest exemptions, payment exemptions, and everything else like that. So, you know, the easier it is for money to come in and money to be able to be repatriated from Ireland, all the better, which actually perfectly leads us to our next question. So aside from the changes in the legal landscape and the toolkit that is out there for Ireland, what are we seeing in practice in the market? What's coming across your desk these days?
The volume of queries that we get around direct lending strategies has dialed up significantly over the last 12 to 18 months. And it's primarily focused around US origination, but also more broadly. But in terms of what's driving that, Ireland has a pretty favorable treaty with the US as regards funds being able to access the treaty, right? So sometimes you get into this situation where if you've got a tax exempt fund, which all of our funds are, you might have issues accessing treaties because the residence position isn't entirely clear. Our treaty with the US is really good in the sense that a fund kind of automatically qualifies as a resident, and then you have to meet the LOB provisions, right, and have good ownership or one of the other tests that need to be satisfied. So we've got a good treaty, right? So what does that mean in practice? Well, it means some of those things like US direct lending, where you can trip yourself up and create a US taxable nexus, we have a treaty to defend that position if you have a treaty eligible vehicle. And that's starting to get a lot of traction from particularly US managers, where to manage that US trade or business risk. And Brett, you can jump in and correct me on any of the technicals here, because I'm conscious I'm talking US tax a little bit, but where you've US trade or business risk, like historically what I would have seen is people had used either a leverage blocker or a season and sell type strategy, and they both have issues to navigate, right, in the context of either there's tax to be paid in the leverage blocker, season and sell, you have to have guidelines. Where you have a treaty platform, well, then you can rely on the treaty. Now, you have to manage independence, which is a piece to look at and manage your ownership. But it is another alternative. And I'm seeing a lot of interest from managers saying, well, actually, do you know what? I like that alternative because it gives me a good tax answer. But also, I end up with a nice regulated vehicle that European investors, German pension funds, French investors like to invest in. So capital has been pretty tapped and pretty restricted the last couple of years. So the more you can do to expand that capital base, I think it's only helpful.
I think that's certainly the case. I do know in my own advising that while I advise across all the various different types of credit structures, I do always say to clients, if you want to unhinge yourself from any restrictions on operations, cash flow, or anything else like that, then really it is the ICAV and no other structure for the most part. Obviously, some structures in Luxembourg and the UK, but agreed that the ICAV is sort of the preeminent vehicle for unhinging. But of course, it comes at a cost. So maybe you could talk about that for a minute.
It's a regulated vehicle, right? So that means you've got to go through a process with the Irish Central Bank. It also means, in theory, you have to have a regulated manager here, but there are also different organizations that you can use as a third party manager, and they kind of just sub the advisory piece back to the fund promoter, right? So it comes with costs in the sense upfront and ongoing. You'll have to appoint a depository, an administrator, and so on. So there is an element of cost. That level of cost can depend on the size of the fund. I kind of typically say for setup, you're probably between 100 and 200,000, right? Just to get up and running. And most of that is your fees around your regulatory application. And then on an annual basis, it's scalable depending on how much the fund grows. So there is that kind of operational aspect. But I think the key thing I'd really emphasize is this is a tried and tested approach. There's a lot of big players that have done it. Some people even use the ICAV, slightly pivot outside of credit, for things like music royalties to manage the US withholding tax.
Those are all forms of esoteric credit. Yeah. A plug to our podcast from 2 years ago about royalties and esoteric credits.
That's entirely fair. I suppose the key point is there's a tried and tested approach. There's a huge ecosystem in Ireland and here where actually, if you're looking to set up a fund, people will be really, really happy to help you set it up, to hold your hand through the process. And like I said, you don't have to set up a regulated manager here, which is a positive because it can get pretty costly when you do that.
And I guess something that is always out there whenever advising clients is, yes, the ICAV works great. Ireland has a great treaty network with the United States. But then there's always concerns about being able to claim treaty benefits with respect to other jurisdictions. Now, comes to mind when we look at this is that, one, probably in many jurisdictions, you won't have interest withholding tax for any variety of reasons. And two, the view on withholding tax of royalties and music royalties can be a bit different, especially when it comes to like pharmaceutical product sales, as opposed to a sense of a royalty payment and a bit of a difference of where withholding tax might come in. I was wondering if maybe you could speak to the ability of the ICAV or the need to have an S-110 for non-US treaty claims. And also substance-wise, in all the conversations, Luxembourg seems to have a lot of substance put on it in the private equity space, but we don't see as much of that in the credit space. So just if you could speak to that and where you think, see things now and what might be coming on the horizon.
Absolutely. So the point you've made, Brad, is well made around if you kind of have a straight credit strategy, right, where it's just interest and you're looking at Europe, most countries have 0% withholding, right? So it can be quite easy to manage. But you have to also think, depending on what field of credit you're playing in, you might end up equitizing the position or you might end up having to take something that you weren't expecting and you could have dividends or other types of return. And what people do in a lot of cases, because again, some countries will look at a tax-exempt vehicle and say, I'm not letting you access my treaty because you're exempt. I don't think you're a resident for the purpose of the treaty. One type of structural approach, you've kind of hit the nail on the head, Brett. Sometimes people will put a Section 110 company underneath the ICAV. And we actually see this a lot in special sits in that space where you do end up with a lot of things that aren't interest. And the reason for that is, one, like a Section 110 company, it's just a normal company, right? Section 110 is an election that it makes into a kind of securitization tax regime. So it's a normal company. It pays tax at 25%, but there are certain ways you can manage the level of tax that arises. But as a normal company that pays tax, it can clearly access treaty benefits or should be able to clearly access treaty benefits. And one benefit that you get out of using that type of strategy, where you hold non-interest generating assets in securitization type vehicles, it can often be hard to manage your tax bill, right? In the sense that interest deductibility, a lot of times you're funding with a profit sweep and note or something similar. So if you're receiving dividends, you're going to end up with a load of interest expense. And now there's rules in place across Europe around how much of that interest expense is deductible. What can work really well, and the reason we see the ICAV S110 in special sits a lot, is because you can kind of group to treat them as one and take that completely off the pitch, that point around interest deductibility. So there's a lot of larger houses globally who have special situation type strategies running through that exact type of platform here in Ireland.
If we sum up, basically, increasingly seeing the ICAV as the predominant vehicle for loan origination, obviously still a lot with S110s, but then a bit of a duo around an ICAV paired with an S110 for a number of different specialty types of opportunities.
Yeah, and on the vehicle of choice point, and I know you've walked through this journey probably with more than one client now, Brett, where that kind of looking to see, is it leverage blocker, is it season and sell, is it ICAV? We're seeing a lot more managers now step back and look at that in terms of options, whereas I'd say historically, I knew certain houses that they were season and sell house. That was it. They weren't going to think of any alternatives. But one thing that's forced people down that road and kind of making it a vehicle of choice of sorts is the benefit you get for dragging in EU investors effectively, right? So if you can get more capital into your fund, that's a win for everyone.
Of course. So, you know, there's always a funny thing in some circles at KPMG with our colleagues in the credit space where they think all we do is credit. So maybe to disabuse everyone that all we do is credit, what else is on the horizon? What else are you doing outside of credit and of interest in Ireland? Maybe talk about the ILP and other type structures.
I mentioned the toolkit that we have in Ireland before. So a lot of times people will look and they'll just say, oh, it's ICAV, it's S110. We also have both a regulated and unregulated partnership model, right? And the regulated version, that was kind of tweaked a few years ago to try and make it more user-friendly for private equity type strategies. So before that, it was pretty tricky to run your classic private equity type fund through an Irish structure. That's kind of now changed. And we're starting to see it's probably more US mid-level managers setting up private equity funds here in Ireland, but it's something where you'll get a bit of traction and it'll move on from. So we do see a bit of that, but we see all types of strategies coming through Irish funds. So I've mentioned the royalties. It wasn't an Irish one. Brett, you remember we did the whiskey one together. So if it can go into a fund, we can do it through Ireland. That one was a bit different, right, with the end structure that we landed at. But yeah, it's kind of pan credit and then pan asset class. There is an option and a vehicle that you can run it through an Irish structure.
Hey, wonderful. Well, to close up, what do you see as the outlook for the Irish market very briefly in the future? More funds, less funds? What's the future?
Yeah, I think it would be more funds. Obviously, I'm going to say that as a guy who's based in Ireland, right? But this is kind of taking it slightly out of the tax wheelhouse, right? There's regulatory change that's happened, and we'll see it kind of coming in with AFMD2, where it'll be kind of level playing field across Europe for loan origination. We haven't had that before. Every country had slightly different rules around loan origination, whereas there's a level playing field now. And what I'm finding and what we hear in the market, Brett, is that people find the ease of setting up a structure and the ease of doing business and running a fund in Ireland, it's very user-friendly, right? So once you do it, we see people setting up their second, third, fourth vintages, right? And I think we're only at the start of that journey because we're working with people on their first and second vintages. So I think it's only going to get bigger over time. So yeah, I think really positive outlook for the future. And certainly it seems like that's aligned in with the government consultation that we've done recently, where it was very much focusing on making sure that we're a jurisdiction of choice for credit and for asset management beyond that.
Well, wonderful. We'll look forward to great things for Ireland in the future. Thank you, Philip.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks, Brett.
Thank you very much for joining Talking Asset Management with KPMG today. We look forward to seeing you on future podcasts and to continuing our private credit series.